because you are a successful person and you're sick and tired of paying a lot. You know, I'm in Montenegro. Taxes here are a flat 9%. Now, I understand no one likes paying taxes, but I can tell you, if I was sitting around in the United States making $1 million and paying 9%, I probably wouldn't have been so ticked off. But some of these countries that get so aggressive, there's always another tax, there's always another expense. You see now, and we don't have to be political, but people are running for political office that think it's not enough. Giving half your money if you're a rich guy in California or New York is not enough. Sure. They need more. They need more. And so, you know, for me, I would like to run a growing business and not feel depressed every time I see more money coming in that half of it has to go out.
Welcome to the Multifamily Cash Flow Addicts Podcast, where you'll learn all the strategies to build passive income one door at a time through multifamily real estate investing. You'll hear from experts in their respected fields and from your real estate investing hosts, Marco and Dan, who have successfully completed dozens of fix and flips and apartment deals. And now, your hosts, Marco Canonico and Daniele DiCerbo.
Welcome to the Multifamily Cash Flow Addicts Podcast. I'm your co-host, Dan.
And I'm your co-host, Marco.
And today we have a super exciting episode ahead of us. We're going to be talking about, of course, real estate investing, but we're going to go more in depth on some of the advantages of moving your business offshore to reduce taxes, you know, obtaining a second residency and second citizenship to help you keep more as an investor. So without further ado, our special guest today is Andrew Henderson. Andrew has founded the Nomad Capitalist to help people increase their personal freedom and to help them improve their financial situations and intelligently diversify their lives. Helping people save $280,000 a year in taxes, getting a second passport in a matter of months to get started on building the business of their dreams, and giving their children educational opportunities they would never would have achieved otherwise via a citizenship by a descent program. All are examples of work he's recently done with this mission in mind. He spent the last 10 years meticulously traveling and living in 100 plus countries with the purpose of finding the best legal strategies and on-the-ground knowledge that works. Andrew's been featured in Forbes, Bloomberg, BBC, CNN, Washington Post, and USA Today, to name a few. Andrew, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, thanks. So I just want you to start by talking to us a little bit about how this all started and why you created the Nomad Capitalist.
Well, it started at a very young age. I've talked about, you know, the greatest gift I had from my family was the gift of financial literacy. I think people sometimes confuse that for being given money. But what I was given was the ability of how to understand business, how to value money, how to manage money. And as part of that, I remember it was somewhat by happenstance. My father and I were talking. I was about 12 years old, newly interested in business. And he said, listen, the world is changing. The United States, where we're from, has been number one for a long time. He was studying, you know, Singapore. This is back in the mid to late 90s. He was studying places like Chile, New Zealand, and a few others that didn't work out, you know, like Argentina. And he said, listen, you should go where you're treated best. You shouldn't stay here just because that's the thing to do. He said, winners go where they're treated best. And winners find ways to succeed no matter what. And those words stayed with me, not immediately, but as I became an adult and as I got into business and as I started making good money in my early 20s, all this libertarian activism I grew up with, all this political interest came home to roost when I got this first tax bill as a business owner, and it all became real. And so I started exploring different places to go and what it would take to create an infrastructure to be a global citizen so that I never had to rely on one place. I wanted to go where I was treated best. And here we are 12 years later. I think I've figured a few things out.
Wow, that's very impressive. So 12 years this has been going on for you?
Yeah, I started out, as I recommend a lot of folks to do, I kind of dipped my toe in and I started doing some traveling and I started noticing things. I said, hey, listen, why is the bank interest in this country three times what it is in the United States? You know, what makes that happen? And I very quickly was motivated to go out and do a lot more traveling. And within the course of two or three years, I was traveling just as much as I was at home. And I was really starting to, you know, settle into some of these places and really starting to study and put together the infrastructure I have now. So what's interesting is if someone came to me and said, here's my end goal, I think I've focused enough on the human side, my own personal human side, and on understanding other people's human side, that I could probably, you know, put them through the paces in 24 months and we could get all the passports, all the offshore structures, all the banking, it could all be done very quickly. But I did it the hard way because there was no nomad capitalist in 2007. And it was just one building block at a time, like any good business.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, even yourself personally having the, you know, the wherewithal to kind of seek out and get those answers for yourself is super crucial here, because, you know, the whole tax, you know, knowledge and, you know, information that people have is very limited, and there's not really many resources you can go to find these information and you know, solve your own issues. So I think as you, you know, ascend as an entrepreneur or a business owner, you start to learn and you hit a few walls, and that's the only way you really learn some of these strategies. So I think having, you know, an entity like yourself to, you know, kind of educate people and let them know that they're not pigeonholed to where they live. And then, you know, there's a better opportunity to keep more in your pocket, I think is pretty interesting. So just want to talk a little bit about, you know, I know you've lived in over 100 plus countries. So, you know, where have you personally lived and, you know, where are you right now?
Well, I've been to about 100 countries. I at a certain point I stopped trying to seek out more. In fact, if I look back at the last year, there's probably only been two or three new ones. I've really been deepening rather than widening at this point. I have personally, I was just making a video about this today. I've developed a series of hubs and also focus cities. And so, you know, I have these focus cities like a Belgrade, Serbia, or Singapore, Mexico City, and others, where I feel totally comfortable there. I know where I'm going. I know what to do. I know the culture, but I don't really live there. But I kind of feel like I live there because I have these, over the years, I've just developed this kind of locality about it. Right now I'm in Montenegro. I spend my summers. I'm looking out over the Adriatic and, you know, beautiful sunset. You know, I have homes in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, in Tbilisi, Georgia, which I think is a very interesting market right now, in Montenegro, and probably missing something. I don't know. I keep a spreadsheet of this stuff, but hopefully coming soon to Mexico City, which I think is a tremendous place also. So
interesting. Huh?
Interesting. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So why would somebody want to move their business offshore? And what exactly would that process look like? Like, how do you get started moving your business offshore?
Well, everyone's process is going to be different. And that's to speak to your thing of what is the right tax advice. You know, people sometimes get frustrated. There's no one size fits all. It depends on a lot of factors. But here's why you do it. Because you are a successful person and you're sick and tired of paying a lot. You know, I'm in Montenegro. Taxes here are a flat 9%. Now, I understand no one likes paying taxes, but I can tell you, if I was sitting around in the United States making $1 million and paying 9%, I probably wouldn't have been so ticked off. But some of these countries that get so aggressive, there's always another tax, there's always another expense. You see now, and we don't have to be political, but people are running for political office that think it's not enough. Giving half your money if you're a rich guy in California or New York is not enough. Yeah. They need more. They need more. And so, you know, for me, I would like to run a growing business and not feel depressed every time I see more money coming in that half of it has to go out and fund wars and paying interest on debt. And so you know, what I look at is, as a newly married guy who will have a family, what kind of life am I creating for myself, for my family, for future generations? How am I going to give back? Because that is important to me, to give to causes that I think are important. And quite frankly, I think that I can do that better than the government. And so, to move your business offshore, with real estate, it's a bit different. Real estate would be go and start a real estate investment business offshore, or potentially manage your portfolio of real estate from offshore. But you can set up an offshore company, you can set up offshore banking, and then typically someone needs to be offshore. That's the easiest way to do it. You need to go and be somewhere else and take advantage of the tax benefits. And so what you're trying to do is align the personal and the business, you as the owner of the business and the employee, the business itself, like where it's registered. And then what you also want to do is you want to make sure you're leaving your current country properly. So for Americans, it's a much more complicated process. For everyone else, Canadians, et cetera, you just check out of the country, and that's become increasingly complicated too. But once you're out, they leave you alone. And then you want to check into a new place that is tax friendly. So, you know, if you move to France, that's not really going to solve your tax problem. They have even higher taxes. But it would look something like form an offshore company. You personally go overseas somewhere and run it. You clean up your affairs and leave the U.S. and structure everything properly for that. And then you go and live in a country like Panama or Singapore, or you just bounce around the world living in different places, as I do. And that way you're not getting into any new tax jams, but you're getting out of the ones that you have now.
But I do want to mention to anybody, if you are interested at all in learning more about how you can passively invest in one of our upcoming deals, simply just text apartments to 813-213-0427 if you live in the United States. Now, if you live in Canada, text apartments to 647-691-1043.
Yeah, so basically just text those numbers, guys, and you'll get some cool resources. There's some PDF explaining kind of how everything works. And some other resources. So shoot a text and yeah. Okay.
Wow.
So in terms of kind of tying that in, like the first thing I'll ask too is, are there specific industries where it might not be advantageous to do so and move your business offshore? Like, are there any kind of no-no sectors that you just, there's no real seeming advantage to it?
I think it really is case by case. I'll tell you a situation yesterday. I mean, I had a guy who, I think it's the first time in years when I've had this, I was walking him through, we have a whole plan process, and I was saying, okay, we have your plan, here's what you need to do. And he's saying, you know what just happened 3 days ago? I got a big contract from a huge US company, and they want me to come and work with them, and my business is gonna grow like 10X. And I said, well, you know, you probably shouldn't stay offshore if your business is gonna grow 10X and they want you there. Better to pay 30% of 10X or 40% of 10X, then, you know, be offshore and have 1/10 the income. Any business that is portable. So, you know, what I do, I can put people anywhere in the world. I can be anywhere in the world. You know, I'm offering services. That's always a great system. Selling stuff online, anything like that, that's always good. However, you know, we've had people who they have on the ground businesses, and we've managed to, you know, diversify their business to where they're not saving all the tax, but they have a pretty substantial savings. So people who run all kinds of companies, I think there's a possibility for most people. What I would say is, if you're not willing to change anything, you can't save. Like, you can't simply open a bank account in Singapore and have the money go there and then say, oh, it's not US money. It's like, they figured that one out.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. I mean, everyone would do that. But if you're willing to change some things, then I think that there's an opportunity for a lot of people to save at least something.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, the second part question to that, in terms of the whole, you know, the offshore businesses and all that. So, you know, Mark and I have watched a lot of your YouTube videos, and they're awesome, by the way. And I know you talk a lot about the benefits of having a secondary residency. I'm in a secondary citizenship. So how have you personally been able to significantly reduce your taxes? And how does that kind of tie into the whole strategy with the, you know, offshore business and all that?
Well, so again, there's the U.S. citizens and U.S. green card holders really go in their own camp, and then everyone else goes in their own camp. So the U.S. citizens are the ones who can never leave the hive, basically. The U.S. tracks you down no matter where you live. And so for years, I didn't spend a day in the U.S. and I dutifully filed my tax return. I was able to pay zero. They've since made some changes to that, to where you've got to pay less, but you've still got to pay a little something. So the way I didn't do this for this reason, really. It's a nice side benefit, but you know, I'm no longer a U.S. citizen, so that means I'm no longer subject to whatever they can dream up. What I think the second residence does is, number one, it gives you a place to live to where you can just be there and be productive and be subject to their tax laws, which might be very friendly. But it also gives you a place to escape your current country. And again, that's different for Americans. But let's say you're Canadian. Canada says, great, you can leave our tax system, but we want to know where you're going.
Right, right.
Yeah. Could you be nomadic? Yeah. They're putting the screws to that. And it's really like, oh, you're paying tax over there now? All right, fine. Okay, are you banking there? Yeah. Okay, good. Like, do you have a house? Do you have an apartment there? Yeah, I do. All right, fine. We're satisfied. So the residence helps with that. The passport helps, whether it's an active plan or a backup plan to get rid of your current citizenship if you find that it's getting in your way. And I can tell you, you know, it's scary for a lot of people, but, you know, being a U.S. citizen, doing business overseas, I've met so many people, they've said it's not worth it. So I think the big reason to have a second passport is if you are a U.S. citizen and you're thinking, this thing is going to get in my way, let me just have a second passport that could become my new passport.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Wow. You know, I absolutely love everything that I'm hearing. It's just so, I think that's kind of where the future's headed. There's a lot of businesses that are operating like nomads. I actually love the name Nomad Capitalist. You know, it kind of speaks to sort of how I envision my future to be, since, you know, our business is operating in a way where we can be anywhere in the world. We need a cell phone, we need a Wi-Fi connection, a laptop, and we're good to go. So I it's just crazy that, you've been able to operate like this and find all these tax advantages. But I just want to ask, I know you touched upon this a little bit earlier on, but, you know, you have some real estate investment properties, but what countries are they in? I know, like I said, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but where specifically are the most of your properties? And what's your experience been like having to manage these properties or deal with any issues that arise being, all over the map?
I've been scaling back the portfolio later, and I like to build it back up. I've been scaling it back recently. I actually did have some stuff in the U.S. That was the worst. And I know a lot of people will disagree with me. I just had a terrible experience with endless fees. And I mean, I sold the last property a couple months ago, and my lawyer sat there. I'm like, what's my net proceeds? And he's reading me, okay, we got this, and then minus this, 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 like 19 different things. I had the worst property management. I just had the worst experience. And I just figured, you know what? I thought it wouldn't be that way. I've been a big investor in the country of Georgia. I've done well there. It's certainly a different market to invest in. You need to know what you're doing, but it's extremely simplistic in that there are no government fees. You know, tax is 5%. There's no property tax. It's like playing on easy mode. I've been investing in Cambodia. Where else? We've been looking at some stuff in Armenia. I really have to keep track of it. Those are the ones currently. We've sold some other stuff, like in Montenegro. I think that's an interesting market. Again, seasonal. You kind of need to know what you're doing there. But those have been the big ones that I've done. And then I own personal homes in a number of countries that are probably pretty bad investments in terms of cash flow, what you guys talk about. But they're positive in terms of I can travel from place to place and just walk in, and I have the same tea kettle and I have an iPhone charger ready to go. And it's just seamless, which helps me grow the business. But I think my strategy has been to buy in places where there's very little management. I have bank accounts in every country. I occasionally have to pay a bill. Some of the countries are on auto pay, and they don't bother you for stuff the way they do in, say, the United States.
Wow. And, when you were just talking about all these different countries that you're investing in, how do you get past the fear of the unknown? Because I'm sure that when you're investing in these markets and you're, you know, doing some research, there's a point where you have to kind of take a little bit of a gamble. I think when you buy a second property in a market that you've worked with, you're using kind of the same contacts and you're leveraging sort of the first experience to, you know, make the second purchase a little bit easier. But when you're getting into a new market, how do you get past that barrier of just really not knowing anything about that country or that city specifically?
I'll add Colombia, by the way, and we're doing Colombia right now. So
okay.
I forgot also, it's, I think, actually a very interesting market. And for those folks who'd like to be closer to the US or Canada, you know, my answer is unique to me because I do this for a living now. And that's where I was when I first started the website. Was I was really digging in on properties, and the website was just a blog to share my experiences. I mean, I imagined maybe I would be somewhat of a media creature, you know, kind of the face of global capitalism or something early on. If I did this blog, I didn't expect people would ask for my help. I think it's a lot of trial and error. I can tell you in Georgia, the capital of Tbilisi, I've been there for 5+ years, and I have found 2 good real estate agents. Two.
That's it.
Two. Two. It's a very nascent market. And so the professionalism is not near what it is. You're not calling real estate agents, you know, at 2 a.m, as you do in the United States, and say, hey, I'm ready to put an offer in. They're not taking your call. They're showing up 20 minutes late in flip-flops. So you have to get past that to be successful because it is different, but that's what makes the returns different. That's what makes the potential different. So for me, it's been a lot of trial and error. One thing that I do, since now we cover all the bases, I mean, we're kind of the only people who do this very holistically. So we'll go in and we'll do, you know, residence, passports, banking. We'll kind of see every opportunity there. And oftentimes, you know, if you have a good lawyer, for example, that's been a source of very good contacts. So if you, like, a business lawyer is always a great, and I imagine you guys have seen this in your business, a business lawyer is a great source of contacts.
For sure.
Yeah. A wealth of knowledge, for sure. So, I mean, the last question I'll follow up with in terms of real estate investment. So, you know, Andrew, I know you spoke a little bit, you know, about your experience with U.S. real estate, and it wasn't the most pleasant in terms of management and, you know, being a nomad and all that. But some of these, you know, tax strategies that you've alluded to, with, you know, the dual citizenship and offshore, you know, business accounts and all that. Are there any sort of specific tax strategies that you can share as a U.S., you know, investor into U.S. properties? Can some of these strategies still be implemented?
Well, I think a lot of people, you could testify, you know, probably aren't paying that much tax on their real estate investments. I mean, it's not like running a business. You're not paying 47% on your income.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that the U.S. tax code largely favors real estate in that matter. And so what I would probably consider doing is, you know, moving some of the money that's post-tax offshore, possibly generating more income on that, or higher interest rates, or, you know, whatever. For example, I'm part of what's essentially a REIT in Cambodia, and we just got the numbers in today. I can tell you it's better than anyone I've heard doing in U.S. real estate. Maybe you guys, I'm sure you guys are on the ball, and maybe you're doing as well. But you know, there are some strategies. I think it becomes a little bit more, I won't say aggressive, but it becomes a bit more case by case with real estate in the U.S. because the inherent nature of it is it's U.S. source income, right? Now, if you have a huge portfolio of properties to where you've built it into a business that needs to be managed and you're doing property management, then yeah, I think that there are some more opportunities there. And I'm hesitant to go into too much details because I don't want someone taking this and then just, like, you know, doing it and saying, oh, I gave them tax advice. But yeah, we were talking about some guys who had, I mean, we had a guy with $1.5 million real estate portfolio recently, and we found some ways. It wasn't like the same as what I would say running an active services business, but we found him some savings. You know, he's, I don't know, saving $50,000 a year or something because it's a business, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, the U.S. is really favors, you know, investment and, you know, reinvesting into the economy too. So they already have, you know, 1031 exchanges where you can continue to defer, you know, your capital gains and roll it over into the next property. But, you know, the disadvantages of that is you kind of forcing yourself to reinvest. You're not always finding, you know, the best property, but you just don't want to pay Uncle Sam, right? So you're just, you'd rather roll it into the next property than, you know, give it up. So I think there's that. You know, Marco and I are personally learning more about opportunity zones as well too. So find those specific, you know, highlighted geo areas that the U.S. government highlights as, you know, somewhat, you know, impoverished areas that they want to have investors kind of invest in these communities. So there's some good tax advantages to investing in those areas as well. But I think for the most part, we're continuing to learn more about the whole tax game. And I think if you can get that down pack, I think in the long run,
My thought on tax is this, right? I mean, I'm not saying that because I did not like investing in U.S. real estate, that nobody can make money. Now, my goal, if I go back to that go where you're treated best, the world is changing thing. If you look at the direction of wealth and the direction of productivity in the world, it started out in Asia long, long, long time ago. It slowly started moving west and ended up somewhere over Western Europe, and now it's going back. Right? The world is moving back towards Asia. People have been saying it for a long time. I'm not inventing it. This is the Asian century. And so, my long-term macro view on U.S. real estate is not super bullish. And I have guys who come to me. We had a gentleman who sold a business for $80 million. He said, I just can't find any cash flow. And I'm buying, strip center. I'm scratching for cash and I want to find more cash. Is it the worst place to invest? No, but to your point, I just think that, the challenge for me is when I hear people say, oh, I'll just let me go ahead and create some deductions in my business. I don't look for deductions. I don't look for places to invest where it's like I get a tax break. My entire life is a tax break, and therefore I can decide what works best for me. And if that were U.S. property, then I would do it. But I think that the paradigm shift for especially entrepreneurs is when your business can pay a 0% or a 1% tax rate and you get to keep all that money, you stop looking for dumb stuff to buy to offset your taxes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great
point. Yeah, that is a good point. So Andrew, going back to Nomad Capitalist, I know you work with accredited investors and enterprise clients. Can you talk a little bit about what industry some of your clients do business in and a little bit about who you typically work with?
Well, there's a lot of these e-commerce guys. What's funny is we see it in waves, right? I mean, we've had waves of people from the crypto investment world. Sometimes when crypto is hitting its low and the guys are saying, let me get out and let me be ready for this next 10x bull run and be tax optimized for that. Sometimes it's when the crypto is high and then they want to protect themselves then. So we kind of see all the people that, whatever's hot. E-commerce has done well, Amazon FBA, stuff like that. Guys do affiliate marketing. So all those kind of online businesses, there's so many of them. But what we've also seen recently, is people who have sold companies, as I said. And we've had probably 7 or 8 people who were in the ultra high net worth category in the last year. We had one gentleman who was approaching that $1 billion mark. And, they've sold businesses or they're running businesses and they're just saying, I want to be diversified, or I think I'm missing something. Give me a passport as an insurance policy. But then lastly, we've seen a number of people where, the business makes $5-10 million a year and it's involved in, servicing mines, for example, or they're doing logistics. And that's the case where it's a little bit more complicated and a little bit more fun, where we have to keep the, the domestic structures and then the offshore structures and make them play nice. So it's a whole potpourri of different types of people, which is fun.
Well, and Marco and I actually have, we know a few friends of ours, a few of them indirectly, but they made a crap ton of money during the height of crypto, and they made all their money in the States and then basically, fled and migrated to a somewhat third world country. I don't know exactly what country it was, but now they're kind of in fear of the U.S. government kind of, trying to get some of that money. But these guys made like tens and tens of, millions of dollars during that off crypto. So pretty interesting stuff too.
Yeah, a lot of people did very well in crypto. It's interesting to watch. Those guys to me are the ultimate candidates for this stuff, because these governments, especially these bankrupt Western governments that have heft to them, the U.S. and Australia and Canada, they're broke. They see these people as potential targets, because 99% of people don't even know what a Bitcoin is. They're like in my category. Who politically sympathizes with me, right?
And
I can sit over a former U.S. citizen. I'm sitting as a U.S. citizen 2 years ago saying, why are you guys continually making my life hard? And everyone else just says, rich guy who doesn't want to pay. No. Rich guy who doesn't want to live here.
Yeah.
You know, all those roads you guys always talk about, I'm not using them.
Yeah, the lifestyle is a huge component of that as well too, right? You have your freedom and, you know, that lifestyle is what kind of pulls you in as well too. And then, you know, if you can finagle your finances to you know, have the same fruits of your physical lifestyle, I think it's amazing. I mean, you know, we're exploring some of the you know, how we can do that with our life. Unfortunately, we have to physically be at some of these properties and you know, show face, right? Because once you kind of keep your distance, then people start to take advantage of you as well too. So there's that component. But yeah, I mean, if we were full online, I think we would be just, you know, first jet to you know, Panama. I heard there's a lot of American expats there. That would probably be where we probably go there, right?
Probably, yeah.
But so Andrew, just to talk a little bit about you know, some of these research, a lot of these topics you cover. I know you wrote the Bible on taking your business offshore. Where can people find the book?
Well, the book is called Nomad Capitalist. It's funny, I spent about 2 years writing it and sharing stories. It's on Amazon. You can find it. It's, you know, as with anything, I imagine I do, it's a little controversial. Some people don't like this stuff. They don't want the information to get out. I suppose some people who like this stuff don't want the information to get out because they think I'm ruining it by democratizing it. But Nomad Capitalist, the book is on Amazon, and I guess it's done very well.
And how many years would you release that one?
The book came out on April 15th of last year.
Okay, awesome.
All right, awesome. I think that is pretty much everything that we wanted to talk about. I got to say, Andrew, it was a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Dan, anything else?
No, that's awesome. I mean, I think we learned a lot about some of the things that we can implement into our business. Because, you know, Marco and I are involved in a few other ventures as well outside of real estate. So it's always interesting to see if, you know, the lifestyle. I mean, like, I think for us, the biggest thing that we want to kind of work on ASAP is probably the citizenship. And we're going to look into that and, you know, maybe talk to you after this call.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. The pleasure is mine. Here's what I would just say in closing, if I may. You know, for me, getting some of this infrastructure in place is not a bad idea. You know, for someone who's listening to the show, who's saying, hey, I like these guys and I'm doing my cash flow investing in the US, I can't leave. You know what? Take a trip somewhere. Go to Georgia on a trip. I promote Georgia as much, but go to Georgia, open a bank account, spend a week, have some of the world's best wines, have delicious food, see something really interesting. I think the more of those little things you do, maybe you set up a residence somewhere and don't live there. Maybe you go and you invest and you get a passport. You buy some real estate somewhere else, you get a passport. And you just get some of that stuff. And maybe you don't flip the switch on it yet. Maybe you just keep it in your back pocket. But the fact that you have it means you're one step closer.
Yeah, that's appealing for us too, because we're two young single guys and we don't really have that kind of commitment that's going to, you know, keep us to one place, and we don't have kids yet, right? So, yeah, definitely interested in that for sure.
Yeah. Again, Andrew, I got to say thank you so much. We learned a lot from you today, and I'm sure a lot of other people listening are learning as well.
Well, it's great to be with you guys, and I appreciate the you're having me.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, all right, guys, that's it, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the Multifamily Cash Flow Addicts podcast. For more free podcasts, go to anchor.fm/cashflowaddicts. If you're interested in learning more about how you can passively invest into one of Marco and Dan's upcoming multifamily deals, text APARTMENTS to 813-213-0427 if you reside in the U.S., or text APARTMENTS to 647-691-1043 if you reside in Canada. You can also visit willowdaleequity.com to learn more. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.